Herman, distracted by his cell phone, ended up entering the freeway on an exit ramp, traveling the wrong way down a crowded interstate. A quick glance at his GPS suggested to Herman that he was on the interstate, just as he'd intended, so he kept driving as cars swerved around him at 75 miles per hour. A news helicopter quickly noticed what was happening and began covering the story from the sky. Then Herman's cell phone rang, so he answered, and his wife's voice said, "Herman, I just heard on the radio that some fool is driving the wrong way on the interstate. Keep a lookout for him and be careful." To which Herman replied, "It's worse than the radio says. There's not one car going the wrong way. There are hundreds of them." We are loath to admit when we are wrong. And that's not just because we are superficially stubborn. Social psychologist Ari Kruglansky has pioneered work on what he calls cognitive closure, which is that moment when a person makes a firm decision, closing all his mental filters to any new information that might change his mind. Now, it's easy to see why a degree of such closure is necessary. If someone lacks all cognitive closure, then ambiguity becomes the norm, and important life decisions are never made. Such a person waffles through the world with events buffeting him back and forth. But a high need for closure can be even more dangerous, shutting down one's discernment too soon, settling for what seems preserving and safe for oneself, but blinding oneself to more far-reaching consequences. Especially in times of high anxiety and stress, Dr. Kruglansky says, everyone's need for closure increases. When things seem uncertain, we crave certainty. In an ambiguous and frightening world, we want simple and clear solutions that we believe will preserve us. Cognitive closure has two stages, according to Dr. Kruglansky. The first is seizing, and the second is freezing. In the first stage, we are driven by urgency or the need to reach closure quickly. So we seize whatever information we can without necessarily taking the time to verify it, as we otherwise would. And in the second stage, we are driven by permanence or the need to preserve that closure for as long as possible. So we freeze our knowledge and we do whatever we can to safeguard it. And once we've frozen, well, our confidence increases. This can quickly devolve into destructiveness. In our individual lives, we may cocoon from the world, cutting off complex but important and life-giving relationships and avenues for living in favor of the simplest tasks we can manage that grant us a feeling of control. In the world writ large, we may give our allegiance to people who make simplistic but certain promises, who paint the world in terms of black and white, who present a crisp and compelling narrative of us against them. And so long as we are among the us and not the them, the message gives us relief from our anxiety. And we accept its worldview, closing ourselves off to any other perspectives. It is, by the way, worth noting that Dr. Kruglansky is not only engaged in an academic study. He himself was born in Poland in 1939, and he grew up in a Jewish ghetto under the Nazis. Cognitive closure is powerful. It leads otherwise rational people to believe things patently contrary to evidence. It leads people to say and do things, or acquiesce to things that in a different time or circumstance they would themselves find abhorrent. Traveling north on a southbound freeway, so to speak, cognitive closure can convince us that it's all the other cars that are driving in the wrong direction. Cognitive closure is also a compelling way to diagnose Paul, who would become the apostle. See, in first century Judea, in which the occupying Roman army was a constant source of anxiety and uncertainty, and in which the nascent but growing Jesus movement was an easy target, Paul became a leading voice identifying Christians as the problem, as the embodiment of all that was wrong in society. Acts chapter 7 and 8 chronicle secondhand Paul's vicious and violent persecution of Christians. And looking back in his own letters to the Corinthians and the Galatians and the Philippians, Paul admits his bad behavior and belief himself. In the face of anxiety and stress, Paul identifies those first Christians as the problem and himself as part of the solution, blocking out all other evidence, closing his filters to any other explanation. Dr. Glansky says that's what makes certainty so dangerous. When you dismiss other points of view, when you ignore information that is critically relevant to making a good judgment. And so Paul, a highly educated and faithful man, refuses to see those who don't share his vision as being worthy of consideration. And he becomes zealously cruel in his approach to them. But then we arrive at today's reading from Acts, albeit a little more difficult to understand in the King James Version. Today, Paul is literally knocked off his horse and onto the ground. A thunderous white light blinds him, both literally and figuratively. The vision that he has obstinately set before himself and claimed as true vanishes in the white light of God. The voice of Jesus speaks aloud to Paul. You are not righteous as you believe yourself to be, Jesus says to Paul. In your demonizing words and actions, in the pain that you are causing and abetting, in your zeal and your certainty, you are persecuting me. Paul's cognitive closure has led him down a path on which he is persecuting the Lord of grace and love. And nothing short of an intervention of grace and love by that same Lord can stop Paul in his tracks and fell the scales from his eyes and open his mind anew to God's reality that runs deeper than our anxieties. Cracking open our cognitive closure requires just such a jolt. And that's what Jesus intends to do in us and for us just as much as in Paul. I worry so much about the world today. I worry for us individually. And our tendency to close ourselves off to relationships that check and challenge us. I worry for us corporately. And the ways we increasingly consider other people as two-dimensional cardboard cutouts. As paper tigers that we can demonize and against whom we rail. And by the way, that's an equal opportunity pursuit. Ari Kruglansky speaks the truth when he says, quote, we should all be suspicious of our own sense of righteousness. Because the alternative is the abyss. The words of Jesus ring out for me, to me, and to us all. If ever we demonize in our words or in our actions, and when we cause pain, and when we abet in the causing of pain, and in our zeal and our certainty, we persecute the Lord. The Lord of grace and love. Paul hears and heeds the words of Jesus, and he is given a new life and a new purpose. It's a harder life, trading circled wagons and a lashing anger for vulnerability and a willingness to speak grace and love even when those to whom he speaks do him injury. But it's a truer life. It's a life centered in God. And it is a life on whom I am convinced the survival of this world ultimately depends. Friends, this day, this very day, can be our road to Damascus. We can be knocked to the ground, our closed minds jarred open, and the white light of the God of love scattering all other images from our vision and replacing them with the vision of discipleship, in which we become apostles. Those whose whole lives are given not to self-righteousness or certainty, but to Jesus and his love. That is good news. And thanks be to God. Amen.